and contradictions. The United States, as the real winner of the war, turned into a safe commercial center due to its distance from the battlefield and the devastation of war, and American banks were soon able to attract capital from other countries. The result of this investment could be seen in the development of large cities and the unprecedented prosperity of American citizens. Therefore, families could have television, a newly discovered magic box in their homes.
Priced RCA Victor ever, only $125 in three modern copies.
At that time, American people could follow the news and events of other countries, get acquainted with the culture and customs of other people of the world, and enjoy the post-war years without spending a dollar. Everything seemed to be going well, but the truth was that young people of the 1960s, who spent their childhood and adolescence in fear of World War II and the nuclear attacks of the Cold War, gradually came to realize the disaster inflicted by the U.S. government on other countries in the world through television programs and pocket radios. Radio and television made young people more united. This was not good for the U.S. government and was considered a great danger to the new human civilization. A civilization that was fed to society by the rise of bourgeoisie society in 18th century that always defined all the do's and don'ts for lower classes. The coalition of young Americans, thanks to the emergence of new information and media, made them familiar with the concepts of anti-capitalism, and they started asking themselves, how do we know that our childhood education system was right? These thoughts cast doubt on American values. When young American justice seekers and social critics compared the American-made Hollywood dream to the realities of society, they saw more contradictions. Fear of atomic bombing in the world of freedom and democracy, ill-treatment of indigenous and black communities, discrimination and ill-treatment of non-American immigrants, widespread poverty on the outskirts of cities, and most importantly, military and political interference in other countries. These issues turned their doubts into certainty. Public opinion polls show how dubious and distrustful people were of U.S.'s political and social institutions. Communists, who were the first enemies of the United States, took advantage of justice-seeking spirit of American youth and created the left-wing liberation movements through propaganda and extensive advertisements. Communists managed to gain a foothold among students from third world countries to the borders of the United States. Leftism and rebellion against capitalism had become the new pose of the world's students and youth. Every day, there were reports of youths seizing the government building and the National Guard intervening to quell the riots. The stars of the American flag were dismantled by the sickle of the Soviet flag, and the coffin of capitalism was pounded with the hammer of communism. The sound of the Soviet red flag waving near the White House agitated the U.S. government.
course, it was not only the United States that faced such a phenomenon. The situation in Europe, especially in the United Kingdom, was much more critical. British government thought of a solution at the time. Brian Epstein was the owner of the biggest musical retail outlets in the north of England. He was looking for a band to turn them into music stars. He met the Beatles, who performed American rock and roll songs at the Cavern Club, and offered to lead their band. After a while, Brian Epstein signed a contract with EMI, the biggest music industry company in Britain, and soon the Beatles' albums reached the top of the music sales chart. In the 1950s, jazz lost its popularity and another music genre was found that was in line with the young American's new outlook and was known as the voice of mutiny and social rebellion with all its simplicity. It was called rock and roll, which originated from the style of jazz and blues. Bill Haley and Elvis Presley were among the first stars of the new genre to become famous for their percussion, superficial lyrics, and dance moves. Rock and roll soon entered among young Europeans, became popular, and gradually changed in conformity with war-torn European society. Later, another group called the Rolling Stones signed a contract with Decca, a rival to EMI, and this contract ignited the rivalry between the Beatles and the Rolling Stones among the youth. Unlike the Beatles, the Rolling Stones tried to portray themselves as anti-government and violent, but it was interesting that the Rolling Stones got an offer to work with Decca Records by a member of the Beatles called Andrew Luke Oldham. All British media, including television, radio, and newspapers, became the news platform of these two groups. There seemed to be nothing more important than them in Britain. They soon made headlines on state radio and television, and even in the British Royal Palace. Rock and roll soon became the language of young people who were politically and socially against European governments. It seemed that young Europeans had found a missing aid that could heal the frustration of a hard war. This style of music, in its new geography, became a way of fighting the system and soon left the borders of England and returned to its original birthplace, the U.S. Gradually, British rock bands started tours and concerts around the world, and during one of their trips to the U.S. media focused specifically on this new style and its stars. About half of the American population, most of whom were young, watched the Ed Sullivan Show on television with the presence of the Beatles, and this made rock popular among young Americans. The American media system, including radio, television, and cinema, did their best to promote this music and even went so far as to create a new lifestyle for government's opponents based on the new music. As fast as the years and events of the 60s passed, companies, bands, and new rock stars were introduced. Rock lyrics more than ever called on young people to fight against the system, a struggle based on the denial of law and order. Experience and wisdom did not matter, and their slogans were, "Don't trust anyone over 30," or "I hope I die before I get old," a song by The Who, My Generation. Mm-hmm. People like Jerry Rubin, the author of Scenarios of the Revolution, were considered anti-capitalist heroes. But no one asked why they were invited to state television programs and allowed to express their anti-government views freely. In 1966, the Daily Mirror wrote about a transparent liquid that was simple and inexpensive to produce. It was first found in the experiments of a Swiss chemist named Albert Hofmann. The liquid was called lysergic acid, or LSD. The influential use of LSD in the United States created the hippie culture. The escape from the modern order of America.
This is a special coverage of a live event.
Well, dear listeners, here we interrupt the normal course of our program to have the live coverage of the speech by Iran's president-elect, Dr. Sayed Ebrahim Raisi, at the Holy Shrine of Imam Reza, peace upon him. Let's take a listen.
Salutations to the eighth Imam, Imam Reza, peace be upon him. Salutations of God be upon Imam Reza. We thank God that on the auspicious occasion of the birth anniversary of Imam Reza, peace be upon him, we are here at his holy shrine . We thank God for being a pilgrim at this holy site in order to thank God and offer congratulations on this auspicious occasion. And this is a great honor for me as a servant cleric to be present here and address this huge gathering . I wish to express greetings to the dear people of Mashhad and the province of Khorasan Razavi and our insightful nation. I also wish to greet the Friday prayer leader of Mashhad and the province and the representative and the leader's representative in the province. And also leaders' representatives in provinces and all the dignitaries, particularly the people and the courageous youths. I wish to welcome you all in line with the remarks by Mr. Marvi, custodian of the Holy Shrine. I wish to mention a few points. There is a very important point with regard to our understanding of the Imam. One aspect of cognition is based on identity, and the other, and there is another aspect of cognition to actually seek wisdom and knowledge about the status of the Imam. And such an understanding will untie the knots in our mind and in line with the such an enlightened existence, we will gain more wisdom and knowledge. We'll reach the point of human cognition concerning the status of the Imam. God has granted inherent dignity to every individual, and in fact, humans have a leading status, and being a human gives you a divine dignity. And humans are superior to other creatures. This is one aspect of dignity. We call that inherent dignity, something granted to all humans. But there is another aspect of dignity, and that is acquisitive dignity. And in order to acquire that, you have to make efforts. And that can be acquired in light of getting to know the representatives of God. That sort of acquisitive dignity requires intellect, hard work, and dignified way of thinking. And not all humans can reach that point of acquiring that type of dignity. That requires linking your mind to divine reasons and to establish bond with individuals who are dignified. We are after acquiring such a status of dignity, and in this way you will reach lofty status. One who is generous and enjoys generosity, he will be known as a generous person. But speaking of the status of a dignified person, some have defined it as being generous, or to be generous before anyone puts forth a demand. But generosity is a manifestation of dignity. One has to reach a point of dignity, then he will become generous. To offer your properties, that's one aspect. To offer your prestige, that's another aspect. And to dedicate your life, that's another aspect. Our martyrs, before becoming a martyr, they were dignified. First, they reached the point of dignity, and then they attained martyrdom. First, they got prepared to dedicate their lives, and they became prepared to dedicate whatever they had for the sake of God. This is a dignified person. The Prophet and the infallible Imams, peace upon them, have come to create persons like Abu Zar and Miqdad, a person who just sees God and thinks about God. This is a person who has acquired dignity. So, I want to draw your attention to this point. Today, all humans who are living on this planet, they claim that they are serving the people. There are different types of rendering services. One is to render service with a materialistic approach that's based on materialism. That's one type of rendering services. to gain profit through providing services. They say we offer services, and in return, we do gain some profit. This is a profit-based service. There are so many people who have this profit-based approach. In Africa, when you ask certain countries, what are you doing in Africa? They say that they are serving the African people, but they are after their interests. In the past, they did not say this, but now they say that wherever we are, we have a profit-based approach, and wherever we can gain interest, we will be present there. This is one type of rendering services. The second type of providing services is a humanitarian one. It's based on humanism, and that is a human-based approach. And he said that there was a person who had no bread to eat, and I gave him bread. I felt pity, and a person had no job. I gave him a job. This is not bad. And when a person sees others suffering hardships, he would sympathize. That's not bad. But before our kind Imam, we want to talk of the third type of service, and that is to serve God, to pay attention to others based on your love of God. Take a look at the tradition of Imam Ali. He went to the He actually took care of needy and poor people. Is it for profit? No, it's for the sake of God. The commander of the faithful was passing through an alley, and he saw an old man that had fell on the ground, and his companions told him he's not a Muslim, just leave him. And the Imam said, when he was a strong man, the society benefited from his services and activities. Why should we leave him? And he addressed Malik Ashtar and said, people are of two groups. People are either Muslims, they believe in Islam, or they are humans based on humanitarian values. That's the viewpoint of Imam Ali, peace be upon him. In an Islamic establishment, the government serves the people, and it should not actually create a feeling that the people are indebted to the government. In fact, all the officials must serve the people. And what is said in the field of management today, the most superior thing they mention is to actually take care of the customer and provide the best services, render the best services to the customer. What we are saying is actually reflects the view of Imam Reza. This is something that must be discussed in the field of management. The managers must be affectionate towards the people, and they should love the people. This love and kindness is the inferior level of the love of God. What should I do to, if you want to see God's proximity, if you ask Imam Reza what you should do in order to see God's proximity, Imam Reza will tell us that you should render services to the people. Mr. Motahari said, you should know that in order to seek God's proximity, you should serve the people. You should resolve people's problems. So, in light of serving the holy shrine, you should also serve the people. You should serve the pilgrims. This is what matters. The same is true about the government. All those who are working within the administration, in the administration, including the managers, the ministers, and the employees, to actually believing in me is not the condition, but to observe people's dignity. That's the condition, precondition for working in my administration. May God protect you all. Today, all individuals who are serving the people in this country, I'm saying this at the holy shrine of Imam Reza. In fact, people's dignity must be observed, and no one is allowed to tarnish people's dignity. In the field of economy, we should focus on justice. The people have cast ballots for the sake of making a change in the country, a change to the benefit of the people, a change to the benefit of the revolutionary values, and a change to the benefit of people's livelihood and the formation of an efficient administration. That's people's demand. As the government, we should restore all people's rights, and as the people's representative, I will not allow any act of violating people's rights. Concerning dignity and economy, economic justice will play a pivotal role. That means distributing the country's capacity based on justice, to distribute the capacities and facilities based on justice. Concerning domestic issues, attention must be paid to justice. That includes educational justice, paying attention to social justice in domestic and foreign policies. Attention must be paid to the people's dignity and people's dignity must not be tarnished in any negotiations. In our domestic and foreign policies, and in the sort of interaction we have with the world, we focus on protecting people's dignity. So So speaking of unhealthy administrative relationships, corruption, unjust relationship, we believe all these are in contravention with human dignity. When we they are all in contrast with human dignity. When we speak of the dignity week and when we salute Imam Reza, we should learn a lesson. The Razavi culture must form our discourse in the country. The lessons we have learned from Imam Reza, he said, if people know what we are saying, they will follow us. If they realize the enlightenment of our remarks, they will just follow those remarks. If the people realize the sweetness of justice, they will only go after justice. And these are the people who must act. I am the one you have trusted. I am your servant. When you are present on the scene, when the young people are present, justice will be administered in this land with your assistance and help, God willing. Today, when you see that the people have been harmed to the coronavirus, this will be put on the agenda. There's going to be people's vaccination. That's going to be an immediate measure that will begin on the very first day of the start of this government in order to protect people's health. People are concerned about the coronavirus today. In dealing with this virus, malicious virus, we should take immediate action in order to go on with vaccinations so that the people would feel calm. And that will contribute to the prosperity of businesses. That's going to be one of my top priorities in the new administration. Let me conclude by saying that in the name of Imam Reza and the Razavi culture and the precepts of the teachings of Imam Reza, and I have the honor to serve this holy site, so with a focus on the topic of human dignity, I consider this as a major point. I closely pay attention to this issue, and I recommend all my colleagues to pay close attention to this issue. I re-emphasize that in the past years, if someone became an official, those who had not cast a ballot in his favor or somehow were not kind to him due to any reason, sometimes they created problems for them, and they said, since you have not cast a ballot in that person's favor, that was the approach in the past. But we focus on meritocracy. We want to focus on meritocracy to select qualified individuals in all sectors and organizations.
Thank you.
Allow me to thank all those who have cast ballots at the time of the coronavirus. I thank all those who have participated in the elections, who have cast ballots in my favor or in favor of other candidates. I have to thank them all. I have to thank the people in this province. I have to thank all the people, and also in the early hours, there was a disruption in the system, and they had to stand in long queues. I wish to thank them and apologize them, and those who, the Iranian expatriates who wanted to cast their ballots, and they were bothered by certain elements. I have to thank them for casting their ballots. One should ask certain governments that they claim to be advocates of human rights. They did not create security for an individual who wanted to cast his ballot as a sign of democracy. And this is a question, and this must be compensated. Those who wanted to cast their ballots and they were somehow harmed, this must be compensated. So as your servant, I'm the servant of all the people. I serve those who cast their ballots and also those who cast their ballots in the favor of other candidates and those who actually failed to cast their ballots. So there was a massive and glorious turnout. It was a meaningful turnout by the people. Some seek to undermine that. But we should thank God. That was a divine blessing and a blessing by Imam Reza for such a massive turnout by the people. Hopefully all of us, all the officials, would be able to make up for such kindness and affection by the people through a dedicated providing dedicated service to the people. Render services to the people. I thank all the organizers, the custodian. I thank the custodian of Imam, the holy shrine of Imam Reza.
Well, that was Iran's president-elect, Ebrahim Raisi, delivering a speech in the holy city.
Well, dear listeners, what you heard was the live coverage of the speech delivered by Iran's president-elect, Dr. Sayed Ebrahim Raisi, at the holy shrine of Imam Reza, peace upon him. Dr. Ebrahim Raisi, among his words, he said, people's dignity must be upheld, and no one is allowed to tarnish people's dignity. Also, the president-elect of Iran said his administration will focus on justice in economics and social sectors. Dr. Sayed Ebrahim Raisi said Iran's dignity must be preserved and protected in foreign relations. He said justice will be administered in the country with people's help. Also, among Dr. Sayed Ebrahim Raisi's words can be mentioned that he said his government will take immediate measures for public vaccination against COVID-19. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, many thanks for being with us. Now we go back to the normal course of our program.
This is IRIB English Radio. What you just heard was our special coverage. We now return to our normal course of programs. In the limelight.
There is a strong desire to understand how the coronavirus pandemic began, but in all this squabbling, we must remember to listen to the science. I prepared for you an article written by Professor Dominic Dwyer, a medical virologist and member of the World Health Organization, China Joint Study Team, on the origins of SARS-CoV-2. The piece is titled, "The Animal Origins Pathway of COVID-19 Outbreak is Logical, but there is no gotcha evidence." The article has been published by the British newspaper The Guardian. Please stay with us for more of Professor Dominic Dwyer's article. The global COVID-19 pandemic may yet become the worst in modern history. Already, there are more than 175 million cases and 3.8 million deaths. As quickly as the pandemic was upon us, so too has been the response. The rapid implementation of new technologies to drive public health, novel approaches to vaccines, and the continuous courage and commitment of our healthcare workers. But with the universal collaboration of those working to fight the virus, comes others who have been unedifying and downright mistaken in their approach. The rejection or lack of scientific advice, prioritization of economic considerations over public health, social media manipulation, and the movement towards an ideological left versus right battle. Swirling around these issues is the drive to understand the origins of SARS-CoV-2. Yes, it is crucial to find out what happened in 2019. In the months leading up to the explosive spread of the virus in China and globally, not for the sake of reproach, but to guide preparations for the next time around. And rest assured, there will be future pandemics as well. Based on nearly all emerging human viruses of the last 50 years, including SARS in 2003 and MERS in 2012, animals are the likely source. By virtue of their ecology, bats play a special role, not just with coronaviruses, but with Ebola, Hendra, and others. According to the recent World Health Organization WHO China study, the animal origins pathway is the most logical, but the gotcha evidence still eludes in what can take years. The lab leak theories for COVID-19 range from accidental to deliberate and even state-sponsored. These are easy claims to make, comprehensible to everyone, part of popular culture. Think Will Smith as a virologist in the film I Am Legend, trusty canine by his side, an AK-47 and vaccine in hand, and catering to political discourse. Accidental human infections in research laboratories have happened previously, but fortunately rarely. For a leak to occur, the virus must be present in the laboratory already, and there would have to be a breakdown of usual regulated laboratory procedures around sample collection and preparation. For further spread, the infected worker must transmit the virus to close contacts, and through them to the wider community. There is currently no clear evidence that any of these steps have happened. Even if these events had occurred, the virus still originated from animals. It goes without saying that research laboratories are involved in searching for unusual pathogens, grow novel viruses for further work, and perform disease and vaccine studies. Knowing their importance in emerging infections, bat viruses research is carried out in laboratories worldwide. The bat virus discovered by Wuhanese researchers, who most closely related to SARS-CoV-2, although too distant to be the parent virus, the RATG13, is only a genetic sequence and has not been grown in the laboratory. Accidental leak from gain-of-function studies has also been floated as the origin of the virus. These studies involve altering the virus's genetic makeup to increase its disease potential or spread, with the aim of better understanding future pandemics and developing vaccines. Such work, sometimes controversial and usually highly regulated, has been performed in specialized laboratories in the United States, in China, and in Europe. Claims have been made about specific features of the virus, the furin cleavage and receptor binding sites being evidence of genetic manipulation. However, these features are also naturally present in coronaviruses from bats and other animals. Commentary about nefarious uses of gain of function or other secret work to weaponize viruses has also circulated. Such theories are easy to state, but difficult to verify without a whistleblower or similar dramatic evidence. Besides, the use of SARS-CoV-2 as a bioweapon is non-practical. Most people with COVID-19 make a full recovery. Transmission is difficult to manipulate, and prior to its emergence, there would have been no vaccines or antiviral drugs to protect the guilty party. An intelligence agency report stated three laboratory workers in Wuhan presented to hospital with undiagnosed respiratory illnesses or pneumonia before December of 2019. Any evidence should be made available for open investigation. Hospitalization with COVID-19 pneumonia occurs in only a modest proportion of infections, so one might assume that many other milder cases were circulating at the time. As outlined in the World Health Organization report, there is no strong evidence of SARS-CoV-2 circulating in Wuhan well prior to December 2019, although the report clearly states that more work is needed. No potentially reasonable theories have been rejected by the World Health Organization report. The World Health Organization itself stated that all hypotheses on the origins of COVID-19 remain on the table. The more people squabble over this issue, the longer it will take to get the science done. However, evidence from all sources must be gathered, verified, and used to guide further work. Evidence gathering must be done collaboratively across scientific disciplines, that is, public health, animal health, plant health, and the environment, and across international borders. This is to everyone's responsibility.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome to another episode of Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by famous Iranian Shiite orator and lecturer Hujjatul Islam Ali. Stay tuned.
خبر اکرم فرمود اصلا مؤمن عاقل زرنگ کیس اونی که یاد مرگ باشه.
The holy prophet of Islam, Prophet Muhammad, stated, "A true clever believer is one who always reminds death." Once, some of the companions of Prophet Muhammad were talking about the person and admired him a lot. The prophet asked them, "Does this person, whom you admire a lot, talk about death, grave, and day of judgment?" The companions answered, "We didn't see him talking about this very much." Then the prophet stated, "Do not admire a person who does not remind death, because such a person is not grown up spiritually."
بعد فرمود که اکیس و ناس اکثر هم ذکرن للموت زرنگترین مردم اکیس و ناس کیسترین مردم.
Then the holy prophet said, "The cleverest among believers is one who always reminds death and prepares himself for it." The holy prophet, through these statements, is giving us a criterion for recognition of a true believer. In other words, the true believer is one who sees himself every day in the mirror of death and is always prepared for the time of death. From the other side, the ignorant one is the person who is careless about the time of death. This type of person cannot grow spiritually based on the criterion that Prophet Muhammad gave us. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to this episode of Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care. Fi amanallah.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 41 meters, 7410 kilohertz for Indian subcontinent. And FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Badr 5, and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.